The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
How's it going? I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his neighbour who never really knows when to go home, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 40 of The Big Picture for the week beginning November 29. Yep, we're 40, and I feel a crisis coming on.
Well, for this week,
we reveal the most surprising superhero this year and what it's like to have your own godlike superpowers.
We've also got an early prediction about Oscar success with Cate Blanchett's upcoming drama, Carol.
I laugh, I giggle, I chortle in the face of fear with my top five monster movies that never really scared me.
Whoa, that's all coming up in the show. But you're right, Mark, we have turned 40. I think we're looking remarkably youthful for 40. I'm speaking for myself, obviously.
Yes. It's the collective we which I get to benefit from. Thanks for that.
Just rope you in on that. But I
wish I could wear ironic T-shirts too, but you know, with my age and hip, you basically can't get away with
it. I think
we've
done it right. We should have done one of those programs where we just look back across the whole last 40 episodes and like relived all the highlights and all the jokes, all the tears.
That would have been one break at least.
Should have people coming and giving speeches. Well, Mark, you know what that sound means. That sound means I'm about to tell you what's going on in cinemas. Speaking of Cate Blanchett, who is coming up in this drama, Carol, that's not for a while. Mark's going to talk about it a little bit later in the show. But she's also in this other movie called Truth, which is also starring Robert Redford, but isn't getting a wide release, which I'm quite surprised about. It's based on something that happened in 2004, where the 60 Minutes program in America was investigating the then president, George W. Bush, about his military service. And what came of that show is basically just this massive, it's like opening a massive can of worms on a domestic and governmental and international level. It just exploded, and that's what's happening in Truth. So I'm very curious about seeing this movie. I'm surprised it hasn't got a wider release.
Yeah, well, not something for everyone on TV this week, but definitely something for millions of others. The last Naruto movie is arriving on DVD this Wednesday. Now, you may laugh, please.
That's a funny word, Naruto.
Naruto's fantastic. Possibly the world's best-known manga character made it to the movies this time last year. But if you were too embarrassed to don your ninja headband and see it on the big screen, then you now have a chance to sample that guilty pleasure in private. Konohagakure ninjas rule!
Yeah. Well, something you also might be ashamed to admit out loud, but you're secretly craving deep in your heart, Mark, is on DVD and Blu-ray this week. Paper Towns is out from the guy who wrote The Fault in Our Stars. This stars supermodel Cara Delevingne, I think is how you pronounce it, some other young dude called Nat Wolff, in a high school odyssey about a love-struck guy trying to track down his disappeared dream girl. One of the regulars on our show, Russ Matthews, was even going so far as trying to tell me that Paper Towns was effectively like a great 80s movie, an 80s teen movie, but made now. I don't think that's going to be the case, but you can check out Paper Towns because it is now on DVD.
Konohagakure ninjas rule. Okay. Starting this coming Sunday, the ABC will devote a week of evenings to documentaries examining how sex is perceived in Australia today. The Sex Sells series isn't just titillation. It investigates, amongst other things, the sex industry and who's actually paying, prostitution today, the place pornography occupies in the lives of everyday Australians, and the rising dangers of revenge porn, which is a real concern. View with caution, but in one week, you stand a chance of really understanding the world your children and basically all of us now live in.
In gobsmacking and eye-popping in entertainment news this week, Mark, Val Kilmer has announced that he's been offered a role in Top Gun 2 to return as Iceman, which is what the original character he played in that Tom Cruise movie from the 80s. Val Kilmer,
they'll have to defrost him.
It's been announced, so I don't know if that means he's accepted it or what, but apparently production is still a long way off. So if anyone thought they were going to get back into the danger zone anytime soon, I don't think that's going to happen anytime.
Well, Monty Python legend Terry Jones, who recently directed Absolutely Anything.
Oh, I'm going to talk about that later in the show.
Which we'll be reviewing later in the show.
Wait for that.
He's set to direct a family animation called Sherlock Hound and the Case of the Missing Santa Claus in 3D. Set in the Victorian era, the film will centre on the world's greatest dog detective, Sherlock Hound, as he unravels the mystery of Santa's disappearance. Additional characters will include the Queen, of course, a polar bear, Father Christmas, penguin elves, Rudolph the Reindeer, and a felonious feline named Moriarty.
Well, after seeing Absolutely Anything, I am even less interested in seeing that new movie he's got coming out.
Stay tuned for that particular commentary.
Wow. Okay, let's get into the first segment of the show.
We really should. We're not afraid of telling you like it is on this show.
We are not.
We are not. Let us tell you exactly what it's like. So we're just going to say it. 2015 was not a great year for superhero movies.
No.
It's not to say that we didn't have a lot of them. We had a fair amount.
There was some around.
Yeah. Fantastic Four, though, was a bit of a dud.
Yes.
Avengers Age of Ultron, mixed bag, didn't really live up to expectations. But one stood out for us. Hitting DVD and Blu-ray this week is the most enjoyable superhero movie of 2015, which also sheds light on how much we'd love to be able to fix our mistakes.
Imagine a soldier the size of an insect. The ultimate secret weapon.
If you give godlike powers to everyone, it's going to be chaos.
So how do we stop him?
By knowing I. Scott, I've been watching you for a while. You're different. And I believe everyone deserves a shot at redemption. Do you?
We are, of course, talking about the Marvel film Ant-Man.
Ant-Man.
Which we thought was just a brilliant film. I think
both of us really liked it.
Did you expect to like it as much?
Not at all. No, I'm not a huge superhero movie guy. I like a lot of them. But Ant-Man just struck me as something that just did not need to be made. Like a pint-sized superhero running around the size of an ant has massive superpowers. Like, really, do we need this movie? It just reeked of Marvel going through its back catalogue and making a movie about anything that it had on the shelves. But when you get to see Scott Lang, who's
Howard
played...
Howard the Duck.
Oh, man, they even made that thing.
Yeah, I know, that's what I'm
yeah.
saying.
But getting to see Paul Rudd play Scott Lang, who's this former burglar who gets this one shot at redemption, as the clip was hinting at, that is given to him by a scientist called Hank Pym, who's played by Michael Douglas. And basically, the movie then becomes this big sort of crime caper about him trying to steal... Scott Lang trying to steal back the ant suit... so it doesn't fall into the hands of, you know, dastardly,
evil people. Yeah.
And so even all of that sounds a
evil
little bit...
Evil people are always trying to get their hands on stuff.
I know. They just want to use them for evil purposes. So all of that...
They could have it if they played nicely. They could have the stuff. They'd probably be able to loan it. There wouldn't be any problems.
But all of those things, I think, just sound a little bit ho-hum and who cares. But I thought... And I think it's particularly important to mention that this is PG. This film is rated PG. Most other films are superhero ones are M or MA. There was something about the PG, the fact that it was aiming more at an all ages or family audience, I think like helped it along the way. So it's in sense of humor and its heroics and charm, and even looking at the way it taps into this origin story, for me, it worked way better than trying too hard to push it into the M and MA categories with like everything from violence to darkness that
can
come with
that. Honestly, as a parent, I knew straight away this was a film that I would not have to have my finger on the fast forward button.
Yeah.
Now, which is just fantastic. The whole way through, the kids would enjoy it. Well, look, what's so appealing about having a miniature hero, though?
Well, I think the great thing in contrast to so many other superhero movies is this point about the PG versus M or MA 15+, which is this movie's not as dark, not as brooding, not as sinister as so many other superheroes have been recently. It's still handled seriously, but it's a lot more lighthearted and fun with what's going on screen. So I think that then also like finds its way into the hero itself. So like Scott Lang's just this kind of guy going about his thing, and he does have superpowers, and you know, not everyone can run around like an ant and like smash stuff. But I think all the way going through the movie, he's a very relatable guy. Just seems like this dude next door who has these superpowers. He's a likable bloke. I think that's where his appeal lies. He's just very likable.
Well, Scott Lang, you mentioned, is basically on a mission, but it's not just to get the suit back. It's actually one of personal redemption. He basically wants to redeem himself for the things he did in the past. Do you think the film suggests that's possible, that we could actually do that?
Yeah, I reckon it does. And like loads of other movies sort of suggest this. Mad Max Fury Road had a very similar presentation of redemption this year. And I think it's a very popular idea, which is you can somehow make up for the bad things that you've done in your life. Even if you make up for them by doing bad things, if it's for a good reason, like we see in Ant-Man, like stealing stuff, that's bad. But if you're stealing it for good reasons, that's good. And it's playing with that idea of like two wrongs make a right, that kind of thing. Or you can equal out what you've done in the past and make up for it. And so my understanding, though, as a Christian and the sort of redemption that's talked about when you hear about Jesus, I'm sure most people who've had anything to do with Jesus and the teachings of Jesus, I've heard about the word redemption. But what he's talking about there and what's on offer to humans who can never pay back their debt to God that they owe because of the sins they've committed against him, just can't do it. Like, there's just no possible way. There are no scales. There are no things that we can live up to and do that can pay it back to God. What Jesus offers instead is through the sacrifice of himself, is paying for the cost of our sins, which is an amazing transaction. It's very difficult to get your head around. But if you can, if you contrast that with what's going on in Ant-Man, you basically realize what's happening in Ant-Man. It sounds good, but it just actually, it can never make up for what's happened in the past. It just, you can't do it. But what's a great thing about what Jesus offers us is he's already done it. He's already paid this cost. The redemption is being held out to you for the sins of your past. What you need to do is accept the offer that is giving him. And that, I think, can transform your life from moment to moment as a result of that, where you don't think about you having to make up for things in the past. Instead, you just want to change your behavior into the future. So Ant-Man doesn't necessarily present that concept, but it is a fun, lighthearted, and extremely entertaining superhero movie, which is a massive surprise this year.
Well, it's a double thumbs up from us for Ant-Man. So it crawls out of the woodwork on Blu-ray and DVD on December 2nd. It's rated PG for mild science fiction, violence, and coarse language. The coarse language isn't even that coarse, to be honest, so don't worry too much. And it stars Paul Rudd, Michael Douglas, and Evangeline Lilly.
Still to come on the show, music to Superpower Dance 2 and an early Oscar prediction from Mark. Welcome back. Now, the best superhero movie of 2015, Ant-Man, got us thinking about superpowers. And a little later in the show, we're also going to talk about a new comedy that gives Simon Pegg, the actor, godlike abilities. So for our soundtrack choice this week, we picked a track whose film clip is like a memorable mini movie about one famous actor's superhuman talent. Of course, that's Weapon of Choice by Fatboy Slim, recorded in 2001. The reason we've chosen it for soundtrack this week is because the film clip is so memorable, which is amazing for radio. Now we're just going to describe to you, but go and check it out.
Go and Google this film
clip. Go and Google
it's well
Weapon
worth
of Choice, Fatboy Slim. And what you'll find is that Spike Jonze, a director who made Where the Wild Things Are and Her and adaptation and being John Malkovich, he directed Christopher Walken, and they set this film clip in the LA Marriott Hotel. And this taps into Christopher Walken's background as a tap dancer. He trained as a tap dancer when he was younger. And the film clip is kind of weird but cool, where Christopher Walken's alone in this hotel, hears this song, and just starts dancing to it. And the choreography is fantastic, and he goes all over the shop. But the superpowers come in about the last minute of the song, where Christopher Walken dives off the balcony above the foyer and then proceeds to kind of float gracefully all over the foyer while still doing tap dancing moves like gravity's no problem for him.
It's actually very cool.
It's amazing. And then also littered amongst the song are references to the book, the science fiction book Dune, which David Lynch made into a movie. So there's another movie connection. And the only movie I could find that it featured in, Weapon of Choice, is this movie that no one saw called Joe Somebody that Tim Allen starred in back in about 2002. Mate, we're on to now showing for this week, and we're doing something a bit unusual this week. There's something that we just don't normally do, which we're not talking about a movie that's actually showing this week, but you're going to want to be aware of this. It's a movie that's actually coming out in January, and that's when, sadly, there's no big picture on the airwaves because we're going to be hibernating. We're 40 now. We're going to need our beauty sleep.
I'm going to need to lie in the sun for a while.
We're going to be away during January, but this movie is out. It stars Cate Blanchett. She's going to take to the screen in this performance that's already being hailed as an Oscar hopeful. Carol, it's the story of a well-to-do married woman in the 1950s who falls in love with a shop girl as bigoted, self-righteous attitudes fight to keep them apart.
Dearest, there are no accidents. And everything comes full circle. No explanation I offer will satisfy you. You seek resolutions because you're young. But you will understand this one day.
How many times have you been in love?
You're always the most beautiful woman in the room.
Rez Balavant. Carol.
Carol is one of those films that, look, I admit straight out, I feel really conflicted about, because at one level, it is about a topic which I find disturbing. We'll talk more about that later in terms of like the homosexual relationship between Carol and the shop girl Therese. But you've got this sort of other valuable and incredibly poignant insight into the world of very, very accomplished people who are also lonely and broken inside, who might be quite isolated and misunderstood. Cate Blanchett plays Carol, who's something of a wealthy sort of married socialite, who actually carefully conceals from the world that she has this same-sex attraction, and her marriage is consequently falling apart because of it. Kyle Chandler, you might remember him from Friday Night Lights.
Yeah, he's a great actor.
He's brilliant.
And Bloodline on Netflix as
exactly.
Well.
And he plays Harge, her husband, who struggles to understand her needs, but ultimately he's trying to win her back, but he is angry, and into this secret turmoil walks Teresa, an innocent shop girl played by Rooney Mara. And in Carol's company, she begins to first fall in love and then finally question her own sexuality, and an affair begins. And this is, again, so for me, real story, but real angst about the choices that the characters make.
Okay, so it sounds like you liked the film.
Yeah, liked the film, but I'm struggling with the content. You see, because it's a brilliant diagnosis of the problem. You see, people want to be loved, okay? And they find someone who will do that for them, and who can argue with that? But there's also some undeniable injustices going on in the film.
And do you think when you're watching the film that these you actually witness these injustices happen, or is it more a movie that's presenting events in a particular way that wants to steer you down a particular path? You know what I mean?
Oh, it's definitely, and this is my struggle with the film, because on the one hand, you've got stuff which I think is quite emotive and encouraging, and I think to some degree quite deep. It is a film I think that people will really warm to, but the problem is where it takes you. Okay, so Carol ends up doing this slow and deliberate seduction of Teresa. And before Teresa even knows what's going on, Carol is deliberately seducing her. The way the sexual exploration works, as if it was a no-harm activity, is
for me, just it set off all sorts of alarm bells, as if somehow in the real world people could investigate things this way, and that would just be a loving and valuable thing.
Yeah, little in the nature of a relationship, but she is still married.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not just the damage to other relationships around, but people think somehow that because there's love involved, that it will do no damage to investigate it this way.
Mm. Do you reckon this movie could have been made 10, 15, 20 years ago? Or is it coming out now because there is so much talk around in society, particularly in the Western world, about the nature of relationships and pretty much the fact that love leads the way, and you should, as adults, be able to be in a relationship with whoever you want? Carol does seem to be tapping into that. Do you think that's the reason it's got up now?
I think it's not new for us to have taught stories about the struggle of people with same-sex attraction, okay, with homosexual, you know, tendencies. So Philadelphia is the classic, you know. Tom Hanks
film for like the early 90s? He won an Oscar for that.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of his Oscars. And that is a brilliant story which moves the same way that Carol does. In fact, look, I would probably say that this film is something like a collision between Philadelphia, but on a female perspective, and The Hours. Because The Hours...
That Nicole Kidman, when she won an Oscar for in the 90s, the author of Virginia Woolf.
I'm not saying it rises to the level of both, but what it actually does is it highlights an issue which I think that is very, very part, you know, of the zeitgeist at the moment. People want to know. People are very pro-homosexual because it's almost become a flag for freedom of choice. Okay, that is the issue. Okay, and then
as in to go against homosexuality would suggest that you are against freedom of choice.
You're against love.
You're against yes.
You know, and who can be against love? You know, and not be a bad guy. But what it also does with The Hours is, and what makes the film very, very seductive, is it lets us into the world of women. And that is a very difficult thing for us to get, you know, right in Hollywood, and I think it actually does that particularly well. But I don't think, I think that there's a fundamental problem right at the heart of Carol, and that is that it plays very loose and fast with a couple of terms. Like, it plays very loose and fast with love and with desire and with acceptance, as if somehow they were all the same thing. Okay, but love is not just an emotional overwhelming of your senses. Love is a decision. It's actually you stopping and saying, I'm going to do the best I possibly can by the other person. And in that respect, Carol actually really falls short of love for Teresa. She's really looking for something for herself. And the idea that you can actually have love and if you reject homosexuality, then you're not accepting someone, as if the two were in competition with each other, is a real mistake. Because you see, you can love someone and completely accept them as a person and yet not approve of their behavior. And that is the real distinction, I think, that particularly Christians have to make, that we really do need to love characters like Carol and characters like Teresa. We really do need to love them, and we really do need to accept them. They're people that God loves. Without saying, okay, we accept everything you do, there's a separation there. And that's the confusion the film doesn't get into. So you're either on Carol's side or you're not. You're either in favor of love or you're not. And that confusion in the end really made me feel icky. It'll go down as a really good film, but it's not a great example of how we're supposed to behave.
Mm. Carol stars Cate Blanchett, Rooney Mara, and Kyle Chandler, and releases nationally on January 14. Hasn't yet been rated, but we're expecting probably around an M because of its sexual content.
Look, there's lots of things that you could actually dig into in terms of film, and we want to encourage you to dig into the resources we're stockpiling for you. One of the things we actually have is a website called thebigpicturewebsite.com.
Catchy.
Head on over there. Easy to remember. The Big Picture. Go back into our previous programs and you'll hear what it used to be called.
Yeah, thebigpicturewebsite.com, way better.
Okay, so anyway, thebigpicturewebsite.com has lots of past programs, lots of video resources, articles and things to deepen your understanding of popular culture so that you can basically do what we do, but for free. So you can basically go out and understand the world and see how the gospel applies. That, the Facebook page, contacting us through tellthebigpicture@gmail.com, all of this at your disposal 24/7.
Stick around, more to come on the show, including godlike abilities in absolutely anything. And Mark informs us of the 5 monster movies that didn't scare him because he's a man.
Thanks for joining us. Coming up in this break, Ben's going to be bringing us the lowdown on this new movie at cinemas called Absolutely Anything. Simon Pegg is given god-like abilities by a bunch of scheming aliens, kind of Bruce Almighty without the inconvenient god bits. Well, before we get to that, though, during the week, Ben caught up with the Real Gospel founder, Sam Robinson, for our regular press record segment where we let some other smart bod do all the thinking for us. We asked Sam if he had any other winning examples of people getting god-like talents from Hollywood and what they tell us about trying to be God.
Sam, we've got a couple of minutes. Let's go.
All right, let's talk Bruce Almighty first.
Oh, mate, great place to start.
Yes, because this is probably the film that everyone thinks about when they think about a human that gets given godlike abilities. And I think Jim Carrey's in the perfect role here. Absolutely, he's the kind of guy who wants everything to go his way. He gets God's powers, and he gets the powers of being able to answer prayer. But I think the restrictions from memory were that he couldn't tell anyone else that he has God's powers, and he also couldn't use the powers to interfere with anyone's free will. Was that right, Ben?
Yeah, I reckon that's right. I think he was just confined to New York or Manhattan Island, something like that.
Yes. So he's got God's powers, but limited in a way, and he kind of uses them for his own personal gain, like training his dog to use the toilet. And I think he chases away some thugs by spewing out a swarm of hornets at one point as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And some of those similar ideas come up in Absolutely Anything, which I'm about to talk about on the show a little bit later on. And when I was watching Absolutely Anything, it kept reminding me of Bruce Almighty, which I'm with you, I think is the biggest example on screen of someone being given godlike abilities. We've got any other examples?
Well, I thought as well about the Jurassic franchise, because every single film of that series sees that humans get the ability to play God and kind of bring back dinosaurs, and it never ends well. It always.
And what do you mean play God, Sam? You mean like creating life out of nothing, yeah, and trying exactly. to then see what happens?
Yes, kind of scientifically meddling with things and thinking that, you know, I don't know, there's just an element of we know better, I think, in all those films.
Yeah, and, yeah, I'm with you. And that we've seen that in films like pretty much since cinema began. Like you get the, like Dr. Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein movies from the 1930s. It's been a fairly common element going through movies of humans trying to create something like God would create. Any other examples you've got?
Well, I thought about two films, Limitless and Lucy, because I think they're quite similar in concept about people becoming superhuman, maybe you could say that, just by their brains expanding and becoming like God in knowledge.
Yeah, having more and more and more knowledge. Limitless had Bradley Cooper, Lucy had Scarlett Johansson. There was also that movie, I think that was last year, where Johnny Depp was in Transcendence, where basically Johnny Depp became the internet.
Yes.
And so he was a guy who had so much knowledge, his mind exploded and he became everything and he became online.
There would be some excellent skills and easy research, I think.
Yeah. Mate, what do you think we learn from all of this?
Well, I don't think there's any film ever made where people get these godlike abilities and it goes well.
Agreed. It never goes well.
No, it always ends with disaster. And I think it's because we are ultimately selfish. You know, we see Bruce Almighty wanting to use these powers, not for good, but for himself and to get his own way. Same with Jurassic Park. And I think it shows as well that it's better to leave God's powers to him. You know, leave these powers. We can't handle it. We're made in God's image. We're like him, but we aren't him. And so I think that's what we can take away, and anyone can take away from these movies, is that, you know, this ultimate power, we just can't handle it in this fallen world.
Imagine this. The entire planet will be destroyed unless you use the absolute power you've been given for good and not evil. That's the situation English comedian Simon Pegg finds himself playing out in Absolutely Anything. Featuring a Monty Python reunion, as well as one of Robin Williams' last roles, this super-powered comedy takes a stab at a very human fantasy. The one about the world being a much better place when I get in control.
It's clear he has no idea of doing any good whatsoever.
Let me have a really great body. And a really big...
Ah! Ow! Not that big, obviously.
I was being selfish. I could have made people happy.
Let everyone who died be alive again.
Ah! Not everyone who's died ever! Are you crazy?
Me be president of the United States.
Oh my God! Ah!
Here are the briefing papers for Syria, the deficit, Israel, and the Middle East.
So, Mark, we do have Simon Pegg as this bloke called Neil, English guy, who one day gets zapped from outer space by absolute power by this bunch of aliens who are played by the voices of the Monty Python team.
And yeah, I heard John Cleese in there.
Yeah, that's right. And all of them are back for this. I'm not really sure why they bothered, but they're all around. And it's directed by Terry Jones, one of the original Monty Python members. And so the power comes to Neil. And then what he's got to do, as that clip suggested, is he's got 10 days to demonstrate that he can use this for good, not evil, even though in the movie they didn't really explain what that is, like what the markers what of good and evil be, yeah. is. It just says, oh, as long as you use it for good, we won't destroy their planet because they're inferior beings. And that is what happens in absolutely everything.
Wait a second. John Cleese, Robin Williams, Terry Jones, Simon Pegg, this should be a ripper.
Yeah, it should be. But get no, from your tone. It's not. Like, surely, in amongst everything we've just said about this, you should already be thinking about, even if you haven't seen it, this sounds like Bruce Almighty, that Jim Carrey.
It does sound, and that was a great comedy.
It was a great comedy, Jim Carrey and Morgan Freeman, and it is very, very similar to that, and a lot of the better ideas in absolutely anything is because I've already just ripped off what was in Bruce Almighty when it comes to a human who's given these abilities to do whatever they want, and just there's not really much that they do in absolutely anything that's terribly inventive from that point. So what I liked about Bruce Almighty is largely on screen and absolutely anything, but done in a far more like lazy and tired and just I don't understand the purpose of this way. And Robin Williams does the voice of a dog in this film. There's bits in the film where it seems like the director of this, Terry Jones, is trying to say that maybe we're dumber than creatures around us, including dogs. I don't know. I'm so confused about what I was meant to get from this film that I just didn't really get much at all.
Okay, so no real strong message, no real strong laughs. Hang on a second, let's try and save it. What actually does happen when human beings basically take on the position of God? Is there any affirmation? Is there anything good to come from that?
Well, no, not so much as a viewer. I don't think it's amazing, as you said, the amount of talent that's in this movie. You just sort of expect that you are going to be laughing at least more than like every half an hour, which is basically what I was doing.
Everybody had an off day all at once.
Oh, they really did. It just feels so slow and sluggish. But when Neil gets these powers, and as you'd imagine, I think this is like pretty accurate of what most people would do. It's what happens in Bruce Almighty too. When you get these powers, you do just do stuff for yourself. You just think selfishly about what you would do. And like that happens for most of the movie though. That and then there's also a love interest and that kind of thing. So you just go off on those tangents for most of the movie. And I didn't understand then what I'm meant to take away from this about if humans had this power and they had the ability to change things. And you do get the scene, like it's in Bruce Almighty, where world hunger and peace and warfare, environmental disasters are addressed. And it's a very smart idea about what would happen if you tried to answer everyone's problems at once. And the short story on that is really you can't solve all things at once. That's probably the best thing that absolutely anything has got to tell us. But Bruce Almighty already told us that anyway. So think about it, as a Christian, I was thinking, well, Jesus had superhuman powers as a human, but he used them not for himself, but for other people. And he used them for God's greater purposes, not just to push his own bandwagon down the street. That, to me, strikes me as a much better use of these powers. So go and investigate that, as opposed to going investigating absolutely anything, which really isn't a great comedy at all.
Okay, so if you'd like to see Bruce Almighty, then you just go off to a video store somewhere and pick that up. If there was such a thing anymore, just, I guess, download it from iTunes. Absolutely anything, though, is rated M for coarse language, sexual references, and violence. It's at cinemas right now, all over the place, and stars Simon Pegg, Kate Beckinsale, and the voices of the Monty Python team, and Robin Williams.
Yeah, all of that, and it's still not that much chop, but there's plenty of chop coming in the rest of the show, Mark, because we've got a monster movie for the whole family to enjoy, if you can believe that. And you're going to give us some lessons in manning up as you unveil the top 5 list of monster movies that you weren't scared by.
I will flex all the way through. Welcome back. And honestly, we've got a great last break for you, mainly because I want to tell you all about the top 5 movies, monster movies, that never scared me at all. I mean, honestly, they were just ridiculous. I'll tell you why, because I'm a real man. But before we get there, Ben's going to take us on a monster trip of a different sort.
Yeah, so last week on the show, Mark reviewed Hotel Transylvania 2, and you can check out the review online at thebigpicturewebsite.com. And then On screen at the moment, there's also some more monsters around, including a release that we're going to talk about on next week's show called In the Heart of the Sea, which is about blokes hunting a sea monster of the deep. So check out.
It's monsters stick around all the way.
Stick around for next week's show. Just sit by the radio all week waiting for us to talk about In the Heart of the Deep next week.
Or carry it around with you.
There you go. Now, for our Vault segment this week, this is that regular spot where we send a reviewer from Insights magazine into the belly of the movie beast. And this reviewer has emerged with one highly recommended choice. Insights editor Adrian Drayton is the guy we sent off on this mission this time, and he searched for a monster movie that the whole family can enjoy.
Well, I dug fairly deep.
And you did?
I did, yes.
Yeah. How deep?
Well, not that deep, because it's a film from the noughties.
Yes.
I found Monsters, Inc.
Oh, mate, that is such a good movie, but for anyone who has not seen it, they'd be wrong if they hadn't seen it. Correct that instantly and go watch it. What's it about?
Well, what it is about is two lovable monsters called James P. Sullivan, who's called Sully,
yeah,
and his wisecracking sidekick called Mike Wazowski. So this is a really ingenious Pixar film. It came out in 2001, and it's a really fun alternate universe where it kind of plays on the whole monsters under the bed idea for kids, in that there's an alternate universe called Monstropolis where all the monsters get assigned...
I'm still laughing. Yep.
Yeah, all the monsters get assigned a door and a kid that they have to go and scare. What happens with poor old Sully and Mike Wazowski is Sully ends up being assigned to a little girl named Boo, and she unfortunately comes back through this alternate universe... Into their world and causes all sorts of havoc and hilarity ensues.
This is an amazingly inventive, imaginative movie, but how, and given what you just described very accurately about the plot, how does it not terrify children?
Well,
or does it, do you think?
No, actually, the first scene in it is about a kid being scared, but it's quickly diffused by the fact that it's all a big setup.
Did it freak your kids out?
No, it didn't freak my kids out, because they love the setup of it. And I think that's what it does really well, is it sets up the fact that monsters aren't really under your bed. So when they bring Boo back, they have to hide her, because anytime a kid comes back into Monstropolis, it causes all sorts of havoc.
They're freaked out by humans, aren't they? Monsters
they
in
are
this.
Freaked
Such
out.
Amazing ideas in this Pixar movie.
Yeah, that's why one of my favorite animated films from Pixar.
Yeah.
It was the fourth film they made, so after A Bug's Life and the two Toy Story films. It has that really inventive alternate universe idea, but also it's a great mix of heart and humor. John Goodman and Billy Crystal voice Sully and Mike Wazowski, and they bounce off one another, and it's just hugely funny.
Anything deeper we can take away from it?
I think it diffuses the fact that we need to be worried about something we don't understand. You get to see into this world that you know is a whole setup, and kids don't really need to be worried about monsters under the bed. And I think that's the really clever takeaway message from this. Yeah, it's just one of those, another all ages film that I think the whole family can enjoy.
Adrian Drayton's done it again for the Vault segment, Mark, and should also do a special commendation for Adrian. He's not a massive fan of monster movies. He's not like you, who's about to talk about top five monster movies that did not scare you. He's more of a scaredy cat, Adrian. And I was very impressed that he ventured forth and found such a great choice in Monsters, Inc. Now, if you're a fan of Adrian, and my goodness, you should be, and how could you not be? And if you aren't, check yourself right now. You can go and check out more of Adrian's stuff on the Insights website. So go to insights.uca.org.au. And while you're there, why not check out Russ Matthews and Toya Gattis's reviews as well on Insights. They are excellent Christian reviewers of movies that are on at cinemas and DVDs, etc., etc. Those guys know what they're doing. Go and check their stuff out on Insights website.
Yeah, and actually, speaking of good websites to go check out as well, go check out Bible Society website, actually, because there's a great article on the moment about Embrace or Distrust, Untying the Knotty Strands of Engaging with Muslims. Now, I think this is really, really apposite for us at the moment, because as Christians in this society, people often want to put us in one box or the other. Are we anti-Muslim because they believe this and we believe that? Or should we be seeking to develop relationships with them and thereby somehow say that we're all in this together? But the truth is harder to find, and somewhere in between the two. We should be loving, we should be supporting. It's all about Christians approaching Islam with the right balance. And so go check out this article, biblesociety.org.au. Well worth your effort.
This week, we've had a bit of a monster theme to the back end of our show. And I've got to say, it got me thinking about monster films that just really weren't that monstrous. You know, there are times that I look at films and I think to myself, I'm not a big monster film guy. I don't like watching them because I do get scared. But some of them, I wonder, what was I supposed to be shivering about?
Five.
Yes, kicking off the top five monster movies that never really scared me, I'd like to begin with the most obvious one. 1958, The Blob. And in fact, The Blob is probably a stand-in for many other films, The Green Slime, The Stuff, The Thing, that all basically work on the same premise. There's something that looks like goo lands on your floor, and you're supposed to be terrified. Yep. You run screaming, yep. It could do all sorts of horrible things, but frankly, it's stupid.
Who's not terrified by a massive blob of jelly chasing you down the street?
Even Steve McQueen in The Blob found it hard to look terribly terrified of the blob.
Whoa, slow moving goo, whoa.
Well, I'm just saying, anything that my mother can clean up with a dustpan is not really threatening life on Earth as far as I'm concerned.
Four.
Now, you might find this to be a bit surprising, but I was never, never terrified by the 1976 film The Omen.
Really? Really?
And the reason
That's
why
a
I was.
Pretty chilly piece of work.
I was not scared in the slightest, because every time I looked at the central villainous character, Damien, I saw a 5-year-old boy with a bowl cut. And basically, I thought to myself, now listen, I'm a parent. I don't take anything from 5-year-olds with bowl cuts. We give bowl cuts. Gregory Peck might have been terrified. The rest of the cast might have been terrified. Birds flying around, but not me.
You don't find the idea of Satan in the form of a child scary at all?
Send Satan to his room, tell him there's no dinner unless he starts analysing his attitude.
We're getting the bowl down and we're getting the scissors out. You know what that means.
That's it.
Three.
I don't know how to emphasize how unterrifying the next character is. But I just want to say to all my friends in the Doctor Who television, you know, universe, Whovians, this is something we've all known for some time. So let's be honest.
Before you actually unveil whatever this is, I'm not a Whovian, so I don't know exactly what you're going to say. But this to me sounds like you're treading on dangerous territory,
I'm protecting myself here because there's nothing like an offended Whovian. Guys, let's be honest. The Daleks are not scary. Anything that you can defeat by running up a flight of stairs, okay, is just not terrifying. Now, I know, I'm up to date. They can float now. But they had to put the anti-grav things in, because let's face it, every time somebody ran over some gravel, that was the end of the Daleks. Run down the beach. Want to stop the Dalek invasion? Go to the beach. Okay, they're not doing anything there.
So what were they able to exterminate? You know, just things on flat floors.
Well, initially, they were invading the flat-floored universe.
Yes, yeah.
But one of the early doctors literally stopped the Daleks in their tracks by throwing his coat over the top of one of them. Okay, that's just... that is it.
Two.
But of course, there are less terrifying things in this universe than the Daleks. And I'm speaking of Mother Nature. It's not as terrifying as it should be. Certainly not in The Happening, which came out in 1995.
Great choice.
M. Night
Can't believe this isn't number one.
M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong, what were you thinking?
Just pronounce that again for us.
It's Shyamalan, I know we're talking about. If you haven't seen The Happening, good on you. I'd just like to say, The Happening's about basically Mother Nature finally deciding it's going to turn against the planet, and there's spores in the breeze that turn us into people who no longer are concerned about our own safety, and so we kill ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, honeybees have disappeared.
It's like the monster is wind.
I know, it is. Farm animals are going crazy. Even the pollen is against us in the film. I can understand why Mark Wahlberg looks so stunned in this film most of the time, because frankly, go inside, turn the air conditioning on, problem over.
One.
But frankly, nothing in the world comes close to the least scariest film of all time, which apparently is a classic, 1963, Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds.
How dare you?
I'm just saying, it's
How just... dare you? That film is fantastic.
Look, apparently, audiences left the film's UK premiere at the Odeon in Leicester Square, London, and Alfred Hitchcock was so keen to sort of follow on the terror of the film that what he did is he put bird sound effects speakers in the trees outside, and so when people ran out, he played the sound of screeching and flapping birds from hidden loudspeakers, and no one noticed. Because let's face it, you hear a seagull, you don't go, ah!
Okay, did you watch the movie? It's really quite tense, and there's a flock of birds trying to track you down, and they're chasing kids, and they're pecking eyes out.
They're birds. They're birds.
They're flying demons from hell that are trying to... People, come on, man.
Look, one of the key scenes of the film is when one of the female characters walks outside and sees play equipment covered in birds.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that ruined my life. Oh, what are you going to do? Gosh, why don't you just go somewhere else? Why don't you go back inside? Turn on the television. I don't know what sort of invasion this is supposed to be, but frankly, birds just don't do it for me.
No, you're just tougher than me, I guess.
Anybody who knows how easy it is to kill a budgie, and by the way, I'd just like to apologize to my brother. That wasn't my fault. Anybody who knows how easy it is to kill a budgie really should understand that there is no threat in a flock of birds.
I mean, birds just don't go around attacking people without no reason. You know what I mean?
I think we're in real trouble.
Huh?
I don't know how this started or why, but I know it's here and we'd be crazy to ignore it.
To ignore what? The bird war?
Yes, the bird war, the bird attack plague. Call it what you like. They're massing out there someplace and they'll be back. You can count on it.
I keep telling you, this isn't a few birds. These are gulls, crows, swifts.
I have never known birds of different species to flock together. The very concept is unimaginable. Why, if that happened, we wouldn't have a chance.
Well, not if we're an old lady scared of swifts, but the rest of us will be fine.
For the record, that
much.
Movie is a classic, I really enjoy your list.
It is a classic. It is a classic of non-scary types. Anyway. That's me.
Okay.
I'm scared as always.
That was this week. Coming up next week on the show, Mark, we are going to have Thor himself, Chris Hemsworth. He won't actually be in the studio, but we'll be talking about him because he's hitting the high seas in search of Moby Dick in the heart of the sea.
We also take off the gloves for the unexpected Rocky spin-off, Creed.
And we're going to dive into this movie called The Night Before, which seems to be a bromance about the reason for the season, which is a little bit like a movie about Mark and I, except way different.
Way, way different.
Way, way different. But we do have a bromance going on.
I'll see you next week.
I'm still going to be Ben McKechnie next week as we bromance it up.
I will be unscared, Mark Hadley.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.